In this week, a police helicopter and 30 officers were called to AFC Wimbledon's away game at AFC Wallingford when a group of fans, unconnected with either team, started taunting the Dons fans. To make matters worse, Joe Shearing got sent off and we ended up losing 3-0. We're the same old Wombles. We're back. Welcome, dear listener. My name is Matt Cooper, and today I'm joined by Adam Proctor, a prospective DTB member, but as allowed on the podcast at the moment because he's not been elected, and Mon Frere Niall Cooper, and our very special guest, the Managing Director of Wimbledon in Sporting History, John Lynch. Hello, one and all. So out of 10, guys, how are we feeling after the last few games? Adam, how are you feeling?
I'm so busy. I don't know what I'm feeling.
Adam is. I just want to describe the scene because when Adam first joined us here, he decided to go with a red outlook. We couldn't work out if he was in some sort of dark room or a brothel. It was very confusing. This is how busy the man is. That he can't even give us a number out of 10 of how he's feeling. Niall, Mon Frere, how are you doing out of 10?
In the world of football,
yep.
I'm about minus 2.
Minus 2. Nice. Minus 2. John, yes. How are you doing?
Well, I'm good. I'm right out there. I would say, 9 out of 10.
There you are. This is the positivity we brought John on for. So, chaps, we've got three games to have a bit of a catch-up on. Barrow, Accrington, Walsall. Now, I confess, I saw the last two games. I didn't see the first one. I didn't see the Barrow game, but I was just excited about the fact that we won away from home. So now it seems like we're transforming our home form to our away form. This is what seems to be going on. I'm going to take a wild punt and say, John, were you at the Barrow game?
I was indeed. Yep.
This man goes to all the games. This is the dream life. What is Barrow like? Because there was, 170 odd of us there.
Yeah. No, I mean, I thought that was quite good, all things considered. It took me 5 hours to drive up there, which is a ball's ache. But let's just say we've played a lot better and lost. So, I was just delighted to get the win, really.
Yeah.
Barrow itself is a very, very interesting area. Quite industrial, quite underprivileged, quite desolate. And probably could do with some levelling up, I would think. But the people there, the club are nice. And it was really good just to get a win, away win under our belts on the back of the franchise win as well.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Those were two good results.
Yeah.
But it looked great. I mean, obviously, Matty Stevens unfortunately seemed to... He took up all of his goal scoring at that game. It was, great couple of minutes. Brilliant finishing. Very creative, I think, with his first goal, which he dinked past the keeper. And that put us... And I think we all thought then, because obviously a win in the next game against Accrington would have put us in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So we all went along to Plough Lane last Tuesday in a positive frame of mind and all of a sudden found ourselves 2-0 down. And I think in the first half, I'm right in saying this, Adam, Niall, that I don't think they had a shot. I don't even think they had anything that was off target.
No, they had no shots. We had 6 shots in that first half.
And I genuinely thought it was just a matter of time. But then we've all seen this game before, haven't we? We've all seen the game where we dominate and then all of a sudden they just scored a wonder goal. Their first goal was amazing. And then we kind of, I guess we're pushing out to try and get an equaliser. And they've suddenly found that extra bit of confidence and got a second in. And then all of a sudden, there's this amazing comeback. But I want to talk about this amazing comeback because our equaliser Does the Accrington goalkeeper not do catching? I just couldn't work out what was going on there. Because it seemed to be a ball that was floated in
You
to the
mean
six
the
yard
mean
area.
the first goal?
The first
Right,
goal,
okay.
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because not the equaliser. The equaliser
Not the
is
equaliser.
Tilly just doing what Tilly does, right? But the I don't really care whether he catches it or not. This is where we go back to this whole like people going, let's talk about rationally about football, like yada 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 yada. I'm a Wimbledon fan. I'm totally and utterly biased in all my attitudes towards Wimbledon. It was a fantastic goal. I don't care whether the goalkeeper does whatever the goalkeeper does. We scored. Wonderful. Both their goals were clearly offside.
I think it was a great finish by Smith. It was a brilliant volley into that corner. It was a great finish. And then, like you say, Tilly just does what Tilly does, and that was immense. Just incredible. But again, it's so we've
You're
come
right,
back from
though.
that.
You're right in what you said. I mean, it was an easy ball to catch, and he wasn't under pressure, and he punched it out. So, it's a bit like the equaliser they had up in Barrow. I mean, goalkeepers tend to give gifts
Yeah.
away sometimes, and we've been on the receiving end of it a few times this season. So I'm glad to see the Accrington keeper returning the favour, really.
Goalkeeping is a, I think goalkeeping at this level is a very difficult one because my sense is, and I mean, I don't know this about the rest of the league, but my sense is that if you're a decent enough goalkeeper, you're going to get, brushed up by a League One, a Championship side, you're going to be playing that level. So either you've got, someone who maybe has come through your academy, or an okay goalkeeper, or you've got someone on loan. And we've had, I can't remember the last. When was the last time we had a permanent goalkeeper? Zanef, yeah, and obviously last season. But as Niall pointed out, he's a bit of a confidence goalkeeper. But I can't remember before that. When was the last time we had a permanent keeper before Nick? It's been a long time. It's been a long time. Anyhow, now we've got Goodman, and he's young and he's learning. And some of the things he does is great. But I think we were one up, and he's Accrington have gone through on goal, and he saved 1 point blank. And he does pull some great stuff out, but then he's prone to a mistake every now and again. But I think it's because he's just, what is he, 20, 21? He's a kid, and he's gonna get a lot better. Probably the next club he goes to, he's gonna do really well.
Yeah, I see him as, I think he's a great shot stopper and he's really good on those one-to-ones and defending the goal running through. But for me, I don't think he commands his area. So those crosses that come in, that ability to get up and get in the mix, just doesn't seem to be there really. But like you say, that's obviously a development thing for him.
Yeah.
I think probably the most rounded goalkeeper I've seen this season was when we played away, and it was Bass,
Great.
who we had last year, and he was their man of the match, and rightly
Oh,
so.
he was
He made
really
some
good, and he
immense saves against us. So,
it was really annoying actually with Bass. Mind you, that was the game when was it Josh Kelly had several years and then
Oh,
punched it to him.
this brings me up. So now we played Walsall. So we've played three of the top four in our last few games, and we've lost all of those three games by the odd goal. Port Vale was a tremendous game. 3-2, we lost by the odd goal there. Notts County, by all accounts, we should have taken at least a point. And I would say that on Saturday against Walsall, that was a nothing. That was a draw game. There was nothing in that between the two sides.
I'm putting my hand up. We all know this because I've been talking about. I sit next to Adam and Matt and a few others, and I have totally to blame. It's got to be. I have watched the last, what, five games, and we have picked up. So the games I've missed, I will obviously never step a foot inside that stadium in Buckinghamshire. Barrow is like basically Scotland, so I'm not going that far. So the games I've watched are Port Vale, Notts County, Grimsby, Walsall, and I don't know where the other was. And basically, we've lost a lot apart from the draw against Accrington Stanley. And every single game I've seen, we should have got something out of it, if not won the game. And it's just like, clearly, all Wimbledon fans out there, I put my hand up, apologise. Clearly, it's my fault. That there's just, that's what it's got to be. We should have had a couple of penalties. We've hit the bar twice in all those games. They've scored some lucky things. And then obviously on Saturday, just to rub it in, their goal scorer, Nathan Lowe, right, is the godson of really good friends of ours. And I have spent at least two or three New Year's Eves with him. Like three families all meet up, including like a fucking, sorry, now you might cut one out, Adam, including a what, 10, 12, 13-year-old Nathan Lowe, who's busy like having a laugh with my daughter, AFC Wimbledon fan. And like, so I know the kid. I know the kid. I know his whole story. I know stuff. He's on loan from Stoke City. Happens to be 18 years old, and he bloody scores against us. I will never speak to that family again, just to put it out there. That's just the future. It's never happening. The guy's on 20 grand a week, by the way.
He's at Stoke, isn't he? He's on. He's a. Is
Yeah.
he on loan from Stoke? Is that right?
Yeah. 20 grand a week.
20 grand a week. Oh my days.
18-year-old
Whoa.
at Walsall on loan from. That is amazing.
Hopefully he's saving his money.
Well, he scored 11 goals this season. 18, 20 grand a week on loan from Stoke.
I'm so. Ugh. But that Walsall game was just. It was just so frustrating, and they played. They knew how to play it, didn't they? They slowed the ball down. When they went one up, they slow everything was slowed down. You know, that suddenly the goalie was catching it, falling on the floor, was happy to take a yellow. You know, just all of this sort of stuff was just so frustrating. And the one thing I noticed is that Nerfel, who's usually got his man every single week, I've seen him beat his man every single week. He couldn't get past their number three. It felt like they'd worked out how to, you know, block that Nerfel and Tilly. Neither of them had a chance. There wasn't a moment where Tilly got into striking distance at all. So it was a really difficult game.
This though, this was a rare moment, and it's a very rare moment that me and Matt during the game talk tactics, because normally we don't understand what's going on. But in this one, what had happened is that both teams were lined up 3-5-2. So for the first time, there was no overlap in the midfield. So they had two people on the flanks who were basically pairing up with Nerfel and Tilly, and that's been our attacking force. Has been though Nerfel and Tilly were brilliant, particularly at Notts County and Port Vale. God knows how we didn't get anything out of those two games. Those two were brilliant. And against Walsall, 5 against 5, and we were just, it was a complete match, you know? So it's like I think we were really unlucky not to get anything out of the game. I mean, those stats from that, from Notts County, from Port Vale, you know, the stats have favoured us, but the ultimate stat didn't. And that's what's been so frustrating. Can we talk about something other than football? I'm getting depressed. This is why I'm on minus two.
Well, you know, I mean, like we've got another game coming up tomorrow. So now it's, you know, now you can't haven't got time to get depressed because it's going to be Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, all the way through.
I'm going to the
Are
House
you
of
off to
Lords
Tranmere
tomorrow.
tomorrow?
Yep,
I'm off to the House of Lords.
heading up there, staying overnight.
God's there.
Yeah,
I love it. You're living my life, my friend. When that is my dream. To watch all the games, it's fantastic. Do you go to the director's box each time?
Yes, I'm guilty of being
Yeah, you
part of
see, you
Prawn
see.
Sandwich Brigade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, listen. You know, football aside, let's move on to other bits of club news then. So, in the last week or so, we've had the results of the two motions that were put forward by the DTB to the fans to vote on. This was one about restricted actions, which got through, and the other one was about reducing the level of fan ownership from 75% to 50.01, and that did not succeed. And it was close. So out of the people that voted, I think just about 70%, just over 70%. Voted in favour, but you need 75% when it becomes a restricted motion like this. So And I think it's a I have a strange feeling that maybe the maybe, you know, there were bits of it that there wasn't enough information. I think some people felt like, you know, the strategy came, something seemed to come out right near the end of the process where people were looking to vote. And I think there were some other things that weren't, you know, didn't particularly become really clear about why we wanted to go down this route. So I don't think people were prepared to take that gamble, or not enough people were prepared to take that gamble. But I must sense that we will come back to this again. And I wouldn't be surprised if we come back to this again next year. But the question is, chaps, what do we do next? Adam, what's your thought? What do we do now? We've rejected this production.
Well, I mean, that was only an option, wasn't it? So it was like to have the option to sell equity to make some money. And it wasn't clear to me what they were going to exactly do with that money, you know, and I wanted it to be a bit clearer in terms of the bond payments and that kind of stuff. So, but I think what we've now said, obviously, is that that isn't an option for the PLC board. So the PLC board now need to hopefully focus their attention on how they increase their general income and to think about different methods and approaches to how they think and consider the 2027 debt, you know. And so that might be talking to commercial loans, that could be talking to existing shareholders. Obviously, we've still got the 6% that we could sell. So there's a conversation about how we might then sort of incentivize that. I don't think we want to rush to go back to the 50.01 at this point. I think we should focus our efforts on that isn't an option anymore. And let's like actually kind of get our heads together and to work out what kind of things we need to do. And again, I think there's been a bit of a mix up between the income that we generate generally and how much that is, how much we lose, you know, per season, and the debt that we obviously have to pay at various points. So I think it's good that we've made a decision, and I hope that the PLC are now focusing their attention on that decision being made and to think about how do we increase our general income, but what is the plan to ensure that we're ready for the 2027 bond repayment. So I think I don't think it's a problem. I think it's all good. I'm glad that we've made a decision. It does feel a little bit late. I would like to have had that conversation maybe earlier, but we are where we are. So, yeah, I don't think we should panic. I think it's all actually okay.
Okay. No, I'm gonna miss you out on this bit because I know what you're gonna say. We're gonna come on and talk about the football governance bill in a bit. So,
I won't do that. But I was going to talk about other stuff. I was going to talk about my opinion on this first, and then I'll talk about the football governance bill. So I won't talk about the football governance bill until we come on to that. So on this, right, where I am is I think we've just wasted so much energy on this debate. The chance of getting it through were always pretty small. And yet, although it came close, and I have to say, I think the DTB threw everything in the kitchen sink and like probably went to B&Q, bought loads more kitchen sinks and threw them at it as well. Absolutely everything to try and get this through. And I still stand by the fact that I do not think this club has put enough on its USP of being a fans owned club and have tried to say the uniqueness of our club could be marketed so much better. I mean, people who talk about, you know, John Green kind of stumbled across us. There will be loads of other people who love the idea of what we're doing because they hate the direction of travel of football in so many other ways. You know, we are the antithesis of what football is going towards and what direction is. And for that reason, I think there are so many people that are interested in that story and we just haven't ever marketed it. And I stand by the fact that I don't believe that there are enough people at the core of the club, and some of them are standing at the DTB, that I think really go into the understanding of what this club is really about and have tried to market it and sell that story far and wide, because I think it is totally doable. That's what's frustrating me about this. I think it's been an utter waste of time and a waste of energy. And, you know, hopefully those people who are like probably disappointed they didn't go through can just go, right, well, okay, look, because we will waste energy if we repeat this, is really pointless. Let's just move on and let's focus all that energy on trying to go down better and more alternative routes that maintain us as a fanland club and really, really push that forward. And this whole thing has just been really frustrating for me to watch.
Yeah. So now you didn't like it particularly, yeah. John, John, I'm interested to I'm interested to hear from you.
Okay, so my view on this from the outside, I think Niall is absolutely on the money with one thing. We have, you know, and I don't think we take it lightly, the greatest story in football.
Yeah.
And we don't sell it. We don't, you know. And that to me is frustrating, but and that's really at the heart of Wish, is about we see ourselves as the storytellers and we see ourselves getting it out there. So, you know, I'm amazed that we have supporter groups in 34 countries for a relatively, you know, minor team that have just grown organically without any input from the club and encouragement. So, you know, that was, well, one of the things I'll talk about later is the international weekend. But I think we have a vast worldwide untapped market in terms of how this voting and things are done. Absolutely agree. I think, Adam, you know, it wasn't clear enough. You know, I think for most people, and I don't know whether it's just me, you know, when somebody's presenting something to me, I always say, give me the idiot's guide for me. And what I mean by that isn't derogatory. It's about give me one or two A4s with a set of relevant points to it, good, bad, and where it's progressing. And I think that would have helped tremendously, you know, for people, you know, perhaps to get their kind of claws into it and look at the areas that they really wanted more information about. And the other thing is you know, the constitution, you know, I know Ivor Heller brought this up at the meeting, but that's needed doing for a long, long time. And that there's obviously there's parts of it that were fine for 2002, but I would hazard a guess there's a lot there that isn't fine for 2024, 25. So to me, it was a bit arse about face, you know, and I don't always agree everything with Ivor. But on that point, I thought it was spot on. You know, I think, you know, let's fix the constitution and how we do these things before we then start to put kind of major choices out in front, because the, you know, what's behind it in terms of, you know, our intent and our processes supports that to be more effective, really. I don't mean to be that criticising, really, but I just think, you know, that's a massive thing they should have done. I think the pitch ownership, for me, should have been explored further. You know, that conversion of loans or bonds to a share of the actual pitch ownership or the freehold of the pitch. You know, I know it's a bit kind of like Chelsea, but on the other hand, it was very effective for Chelsea's fans, stopping them being moved away from Stamford Bridge. So, I felt it was too rushed, and I felt there wasn't enough information. It was a bit kind of bull in the china shop, really. But that's just my personal opinion.
John, I think that's what it felt like. That's what it felt like for me as well. And I like you, I would like a really simple guide that just was unbiased in a way, that just said pros and cons. This is what happens, because there were some cons to it as well, which is, you know, that thing about potentially minority shareholders coming together to block special resolutions. So there were some other things to it as well. And then we start to lose control and you can never really get that back. I mean, it's a difficult one, and we're going to have to look at this, what we do next to raise that money. And by way of a segue into our next section, I noticed that one of the DTB prospective, one of the nominees for the Don's Trust board, a guy called Simon Hood, has started this conversation on Facebook, you know, giving a huge list of ideas that he's come across over the period of the time. I mean, I he probably doesn't listen to our podcasts, so he doesn't. So there's not much here about, you know, the selling the USP, but he does talk about things like, you know, partnering with Wish, for instance, and other things that he's heard as well. And I'm sure other members, other people standing as well, have got some great ideas, haven't you, Adam? So there's some good stuff being.
I absolutely butchered the kind of finance question on the hustings thing. So, but I do think, it, as has been better said than me, is that it's down to the PLC board to really drive this, and we as members have made it clear that we're not prepared to release any more equity at this point. And so, I want the PLC to pursue all types of avenues to increase revenue where they need and to secure debt repayments and that kind of stuff ASAP. Like Niall says, I hope we don't return to this too soon. And if we do, I think we need proper safeguards in place to ensure that we still maintain all of the kind of things that make us fan-owned and unique. So, yeah, it was rushed. It felt like a bit of a muddle. It wasn't very clear and frustrating, as Niall said, a waste of time, really. So I hope the PLC now can just kind of move forward and, you know, think about how they kind of take the mandate that we've said, which is we are not prepared to do that at this point.
Yeah, that's a great political answer, Adam. I like it. You're doing really well. So we've got
in respect to Simon. I mean, I was actually one of the people that proposed him. He is the Great Britain's Young Entrepreneur of the Year, and he's done an amazing job with a company that was in very, very poor condition when he took it over. And then he had COVID to deal with, but he's battled through all of it. So he's an ideas person. And you know, no disrespect to anyone else, I just think that anybody that's recognised as being that skilled in managing to do something, you know, I would like to see him. And he has supported Wish projects, and he is a lifelong Wimbledon. You know, I'm not sure I'm meant to be promoting him on here.
No, we're going to have to cut all of this.
He's a really good guy. You know, and I think you need those kind of robust people, because I know that some people are standing down because of the abuse that they've suffered. And that's happened in the past, as, you know, Niall knows as well. And, you know, that is one thing that I'd like to see the club really concentrating on as well, is that whole thing about conduct and social media and you know, some of the absolutely outrageous things that are said on there, you know, under the guise of different names, et cetera, that would definitely be libelous, you know. I mean, it's just, so yeah, I mean, good luck, Adam. Good luck, all of them, with Simon as well. I hope there can be a kind of more of a kind of cover for you from the club, really. About some of the things you get subjected to, so I definitely like to see that as a priority.
Yeah, I mean, and so just for with the BBC compliance non-bias avenue, I'm just going to say that the other candidates are, in alphabetical order by surname, Martin Drake, Alex Folkes, Ivor Heller, Simon Hood, Simon Hosen Green, James Longhurst, James McDonald, Sean McLaughlin, Graham Price, Adam Proctor, and Dominic Proctor. Can't get in that bit. There can't be two Proctors. Proctor. Anyhow, so, and just to say, great work again. I don't know what he's like. Does Graham Stacey get some sort of medal, or what's he doing? Because he seems to be everywhere at the moment. So he kind of put together the hustings, which you can now find on the Don's Trust website, and they're on YouTube as well. So you can have a look at all the hustings, and also on the Don's Trust website is the manifestos for everyone standing as well. The deadline to remind, the deadline to vote is the 3rd of December, so make sure you get your votes in before then. And I think you can vote up to 8 people, because 8 people, there are 8 places available and there are 12 people standing. Adam, I want to just pick up something because I don't think this is controversial at all. I'd just like to know, what was the hustings like? What was that like to do?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, it was good. I mean, it was a little bit stressful. So there was Graham and two other people who were involved in the hustings. So it was three, and Gary, and I can't remember the third person. I think Justin might have been his name. So I need to check. But anyway, so the first things for everyone to know is that we didn't know any of the questions in advance. So we weren't given that information. So it was kind of a, let us know when you're free over the week, and we're going to give you the same questions to every candidate, and one specifically about your manifesto. So that was a bit stressful. I think I really butchered the first finances question, actually, and I think other people did in particular. I think Alex and Martin did a really good job in answering that question. It felt like a bit of a grilling. So that was kind of like full on. But it was done in great spirit. Graham couldn't come. Gary was the only one on my call because Graham wasn't available, but it was the same question. So it wasn't a big deal. It was more a case of managing the fact that you were only allowed 2 minutes per question. I was really pleased that I got to do it. I've watched all of them. I think they're really interesting, and they do a great job of hearing from people. And of course, you know, slightly different mode instead of being the text stuff that we're obviously responding to stuff on pro boards, which is slightly different. I'm fortunate that I get to chat on this podcast every so often anyway, so that helps me a little bit potentially if anyone listens to this and is actually involved in voting.
You know, we've got 16 followers on Threads.
Exactly, we've got them all. No, it was really good. It was really good.
Blue Sky's gone through the roof, hasn't it, though?
Blue Sky's gone through the roof. Well, when it's the 40s on Blue Sky.
Yeah, no, it was really good. I mean, I think it would have been nice to have had the questions in advance, I think, but it was a bit more like question time where you don't know them in advance. And that, I think, it can be quite... I'm okay with stuff like that generally, but it's quite... I think it can be quite stressful to not know exactly what you're going to be asked when you want to have a really concise response. And like I said, I feel like I didn't have a good enough response to the first question. So I felt a bit like, oh, if I'd thought about this a bit more, if I'd known in advance, I might have been more sensible with my response, and hopefully no one turned off after 5 minutes and they actually listened to the rest when I thought I got a bit better. But I thought it was great. I was really pleased. It's long. I mean, there's a lot to watch.
But it's worthwhile. It's worthwhile. People, look, watch the hustings, read the manifestos, you know. My sense is always that everyone who joins as their, you know, has the Dons at their heart. They always want the best for the club. People are sometimes coming at it from slightly different angles, but generally speaking, people really do want the best for this club. I think the big issue for me is that I think everyone's got loads of great ideas, and everyone's mentioned comms. Everyone's mentioned comms for years. It's been a thing that's been coming up years and years, and everyone has brilliant ideas. I think the problem is always going to be the fact that there's this huge ideal about what the DTB can do, and they're going to get limited by time and the resources to make all these things happen. I think there has to be an understanding. It's an oversight board, really, and a lot of the work has to be done by either the staff, and we haven't got a huge staff. We haven't got a huge staff at the club, all by volunteers and the great work, obviously, that John does. We'll come on to that later, but
no, I think Matthew, I was just gonna, I know Niall's got, he will definitely have some stuff to say, but I was just, it's been just because of the kind of process of the elections and whatever, one thing I've been thinking a lot about is how do you kind of set up some task and finish activities that are small but doable, that allow you to make those little improvements, and that is something, if I was to get on the board, I'd really be thinking quite seriously about. It's like, how do I have something that is small enough that it's going to be finishable, and that it nudges things in the right direction. And I think that is, during the election process, some of my thoughts on that have changed a bit. It's like, don't have these kind of big grand ideas. Think about some little things, small wins that are easily understandable and that kind of stuff. Because I think you're right. It's clear that it's a very heavy load for volunteers to work on.
So where I'm at with this is, I go back to, I think one of the key recruitments we need to have is a volunteer manager, because I stand by the fact that I think there are so many talented people at AFC Wimbledon, but it's about being able to maintain, recruit the right people to help the club, because there's some really good ideas, but they never really happen. Look, I stand by the fact that I think that one of the big things that Zafa and I, when we were on the board, tried to do was help with the volunteer pool and try to get that moving. We bit off more than we could chew, and ultimately we needed a full-time person to be able to manage that, and that isn't in place. In terms of the kind of working structures, what the DTB can do is look at what the DTB comms is, the Don's Trust comms and the Don's Trust engagement, and some of the kind of more fan-related activities that potentially could sit more within the Don's Trust. That, I think, is a way you can do. The rest of it is oversight. I admit that when I was on the board, I got heavily involved with the comms team towards the end, and I was doing a kind of unofficial comms role, and they were great to work with, actually, the comms team. I think they were massively underestimated. I was involved in the hiring of Chris Thorpe, and I think Chris has done an amazing job since then, and really good. And I think now with the director of comms, Mark Jones, the keys, my mind is actually the comms from the club, and the tone is definitely improved, and the quality is improved. But I think we had decent people in place that just needed to have that extra bit of nudging. So I think there's stuff there. It does annoy me that people always talk about comms, because it's like what they don't ever do is say, and I will fix it by doing this bit. And I will, it's like, what is the point of pointing a finger without ever offering a solution? We need to become solution based, and those solutions need to be realistic. And that's the bit that a lot of people have done. You can point, it's like we can point at the club saying it's broken, and they go like, all the players on the pitch are broken, and we need to do this or that. And unless you're going to say, right, well, actually, I'm going to help us by getting this extra revenue in, or we're going to do this, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. Ultimately, you're not really helping. And I think it's about, as a club, and our history of the club and where we've come from, it should be about rolling up your sleeves and helping us get those solutions and getting on board. Because you don't do anything by shouting and screaming. If you shout and scream at somebody, all you're going to do is put them off and not want them to do anything.
And we've had, oh, there's been a lot of abuse, as John's alluded to as well, and Niall, as you experienced. So we need to, that needs to be, hopefully, that is now addressed in the DTB. I really hope that's now really addressed. Okay. Well, listen, I want to move on quickly, Niall, if you don't mind, just to have it give us, because I know one of the big things that we could benefit from is the Football Governance Bill. Where are we at with this? Because when earlier on I asked you how you were doing and you said minus two, I was really worried. What's going on?
I'm just talking minus two, it's just me talking about the performance on the pitch for Wimbledon, right?
Okay.
Football Governance Bill, probably asked me Thursday morning. Wednesday night at 3:40, well, Wednesday at 3:45 in the afternoon, the House of Lords will start looking at all the amendments to the Football Governance Bill. We don't know yet, I'll know a bit tomorrow, what order they're going to be taken in. That's the first day, and there are two more days, the 2nd and 4th of December. By the 4th of December, we will know, by and large, how many of those amendments will actually go forward. The reason why it's crucial for fair game is because our amendments, all of them, have been tabled by Labour peers. So if they get through, then it's very likely they will make it all the way through, because it's unlikely that a Labour government would reverse a motion passed in the Lords by Labour peers. Those motions include the crucial one on parameters around distribution deals, which would include getting more money towards AFC Wimbledon. They also include the Wimbledon clause, which means that no club will be able to relocate a club without, beyond 5 miles from where that club is now, without the permission of its fans. That's one of our amendments. There are amendments about vested interests, so nobody's allowed to be, can be a board member or on the advisory of the regulator with, if they are also part of the Premier League or in pay of the Premier League, or majority of their funding comes from the Premier League. So there's lots of really very, very, very important things that will financially benefit AFC Wimbledon and the clubs down the bottom of the pyramid that want to run things well. So, you know, there are bits around if you are, if you pay less on your players' wages and you're getting revenue, then you should be rewarded for that. And that sounds crazy, but we all know that's not the case. So there's lots of good stuff in there. For me, I've spent 3.5, 4 years lobbying and working really, really, really hard on this. Wednesday could be the day when I know I'm going to be, I've failed or I've succeeded. That's how big it is. 3.5, 4 years worth of work comes down to Wednesday's vote.
I'm sure it'll be more nuanced than a win or a loss. I'm sure it'll be more nuanced. Not, if someone wants to find out all the amendments that you're putting forwards or all the amendments that have been, can they find them on the Fair Game site? Can people find out where all the amendments are?
If you go to fairgameuk.org and you look on reports, there's a whole section about the amendments on there that you can read them all through. There's quick summaries and then there's the actual amendments underneath them all that'll tell you a lot more. Obviously, you can follow me on Blue Sky and there's a lot of updates coming there or LinkedIn or the other platform.
We can't express how changing this could be for football. Even a regulator would be changing. But if they start to have changing the way the parachute payments work, and it's actually based on a fair game index, so it's how well run your club is, potentially, then that is a huge change. Because then that money isn't distributed necessarily equally between the leagues. It's distributed on how well run your club is.
Yeah, exactly. So it would make a massive difference to the idea of incentivizing clubs to be well run. And AFC Wimbledon, despite all the conversations, is actually financially a well run club, compared to all the other clubs around us. So we would be a club that would benefit from that because we do things the right way. We don't try and risk it. I mean, like in our division, a losses of 2 million, 2.5 million is the norm, and we're under that. In the Championship, right, Millwall will consider themselves to be one of the best well-run clubs in the Championship. They run annual losses of 10 million quid, right? So, and they are considered to be among the best run clubs. I mean, this is an industry that's completely warped. So until that is sorted and until you end this culture of gambling, then it's going to make it really difficult. The reason why we do make a bit of a loss is because we're trying to compete in a league that's completely balmy. At least it's not as balmy as the Championship, which is even more balmy. But like, you know, the whole situation is just ridiculous. And a regulator, even as it is now, will help address that. If the amendments we propose get passed, then we are looking at quite a significant change to how football operates, and it'll be a really good thing. There are some nice rogue ones in there as well that we've thrown in that might steal a few headlines. There's one about clubs aren't allowed to be state-owned.
We're not going to mention that. We wanted people to find that out secretly. Mind you, it's only our one listener, so we're all right.
So can I ask like a stupid question, I guess? So we've done a bunch of... The Lords have read this thing twice. It now goes back to the Houses of Parliament or the MPs on Wednesday. What happens on Wednesday? So tell me what happens. So what I want to know is it goes to someone next, and then what is the timeline? What's the time frame for things to potentially change? Like, how long are we waiting? Are we going to be 10 years?
Okay, very, very, very quickly, because we've got a very important John Lynch bit at the end, right? So yeah. I'm going to be quick on this. Right, so Wednesday night is when it goes to the committee stage of the House of Lords. So the committee stage is where all the amendments that have been made to the bill get discussed. The Lords is different to the Commons in the fact that the Lords committee stage is, in fact, all of the members of the Lords are part of the committee. So it's called the Grand Committee. So any Lord can table an amendment. And we've managed to get all of our amendments put down by Lords, which is actually a massive achievement. They will be discussed over 3 days. So November 27th, Wednesday, December 2nd and December 4th. At that point, effectively, we will get put forward a new bill with all those amendments taken onto it. We should go to a report stage in the House of Lords. It doesn't take very long. The report stage is basically being a nod through scenario. Then it goes to the House of Commons. It goes through the same process in the House of Commons. So there's a committee stage and a report stage. The committee stage in the House of Commons is just 17 MPs, but it will be 17 MPs that are majority Labour, and most of our amendments have been put down by Labour peers, so we will not expect them to be reversed in the committee stage, and then unlikely to be reversed in the House of Commons. There are some other random things that might pass in the House of Lords that we would expect the House of Commons to just kick out
and,
again.
And just
but it's
quickly,
unlikely to be our stuff.
Just quickly, now, when would it expect to become law? What's that? When does it go to
well,
the? Does it get?
I've heard all sorts of things. The earliest I've heard is early February, if it goes through the Commons quite quickly. The Lords, it should be done out of the Lords end of this year, if not early January, right? And then it depends how fast they put it through the House of Commons. And then it could then become law quite quickly. Though I have heard other people talking about May. But we should definitely have a regulator in place for the start of the next season. And the shadow regulator is already operating. So there's a lot of things that are already being put in place as we speak. So we will be under a new regulatory system for 25-26.
Dear listener, we bring you all the news from the footballing world. You know, all the news about the Dons Trust, all the news about football governance. You just keep listening here, and we'll keep giving this stuff. Nothing on this podcast is about football. We're really old men. But very interesting. And we've got this amazing story. That's the wonderful thing about Wimbledon is this incredible story. As the song says, we're two times out of non-league. We have a history that goes all the way back to 1889 with some incredible parts along the way, beating Burnley in the FA Cup. The wonderful eras back in the 30s of Doc Dowden, getting into the league, 78, all of this wonderful history, the FA Cup, then having to start again, getting out of non-league and getting back into the league. It's incredible. If only all this information was recorded somewhere. If only we had an organisation who had the remit to pull all this together and showcase it in a variety of wonderful ways. And now I say hello to the wonderful John Lynch.
No pressure. Thank you very much for that.
It's fantastic. Yeah. So how long, can I ask, first of all, when did Wish get going?
2018 was when I first walked into the DTB with a mad idea of, or a request for them to give me a museum at the new stadium. And it kind of grew from there, really. So Wish as a charity was constituted in 2019. So it's our, 5 years up. So we're in the process of documenting the last 5 years and then looking forward at the next 5 years. So hopefully that'll be out at the beginning of new year. This is what we've done and this is what we intend to do. Hopefully that'll be an interesting read. It is a huge body of work. Each year we say we're going to step back and not do so much. And then that goes out the window because we see an opportunity and we have to grab it. So, and I must admit that, you know, I'm quite guilty of that, really. I'm just a boy that can't say no, really. So coming up, we've got the Batsford 50th anniversary reunion dinner, Friday, 31st of January. Some of those players haven't actually seen each other for half a century. So that chance to get that legendary team into one space together for one night was something. I mean, it was something that Mick Pugh and I, it was another one of our joint dreams that we talked about incessantly for decades. And I'm glad he got the museum. He won't be there for the Batsford reunion. But he'll be there in spirit and he'll be thought about. You know, for people that were there during that time, it's a great chance to relive those incredible memories. And for Wimbledon fans that weren't alive or there at that time, it's a great chance to learn about what happened and how we finally got elected to the Football League and this incredible team that came together at a time when the club was really vulnerable. And kind of picked it up by its bootstraps, really. So we have the whole team coming. apart from the two that have passed away, which is Dave Donaldson and obviously Alan Batsford, the manager. But I'm delighted to say that the two widows are joining us. So we have full team representation there, and their memories and their stories. A lot of stuff people haven't heard before. They're going to learn about the haggis atrocity at Ellen Road, amongst other wonderful things. They're going to hear about Wombles being ejected from the team train. So loads of stuff that, you know, it kind of goes on the background, it gets forgotten about. But it's a chance to hear about that and to ask this team kind of any questions. And we've got some video footage that hasn't been seen before to show on the night. So for anyone coming along, it's a real celebration of that period and that team's achievements.
And how do people get tickets? Where are the tickets?
They're on the club website. They're hidden a bit on the ticket section. You have to scroll down and load them all, but they're there. So, yeah, it's £85 for a ticket. It includes a two-course dinner and a welcome drink, £800 for a table of 10. I think we've sold approximately about 70% of the room already. So, you know, I'd encourage people, you know, before you spend your money on Christmas, perhaps you might like to grab a ticket or two for what will be a very special event at the club. And on the same day, we're reopening the museum. So, you know, I just thought, as we've got those legends all in one place at the same time, so they're going to be there, and we're inviting all of the cabinet sponsors that have responded so well to come down and be part of that relaunch and reopening.
Because, John, just to stop you there, because this was the thing that when people talk about the flood, obviously people talk about the pitch, and obviously the incredible effort of Dubes in getting that fundraising off the ground. But it had an impact beyond just the pitch. I mean, obviously, all the admin area was on the ground floor. That was all destroyed. And it wasn't destroyed as such, but the exhibition space was really damaged, wasn't it, in the floods? What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, luckily we got all of the artifacts out. So we had volunteers in. They lost a lot of weight that week because none of the lifts were working. So they physically had to remove everything, walk it up three floors and then to the other end of the stadium into the storeroom. And what a great job they did. Because there was no runoff from that space. So, you know, it was a dead end, really. So the water that went in there stayed in there. And because of the cabinets and where they were and the inability to shift them, it was underwater more than the rest of the stadium. So I think it was the last place to get pumped out. So, yeah, we're coming back. We've got all new cabinets. And thank you to the insurance loss adjusters for agreeing to condemn our other cabinets. So it'll be a very difficult experience in there now. And I think people really enjoy it. And what's extra exciting is that museum will be open and accessible the same as shop hours now. Because we've changed the security, there's nothing on the floor, nothing that's easily accessible. You know, we're making changes with the CCTV and the security, and because we want it open. We want people to come in the shop and just walk past and think, oh, what's this? So it's going to be bigger. It's going to be brighter. It's going to be
better. Does that mean people can go in there before and after games as well? Will it be open then?
Yeah. It'll be open all the time, the shop is.
Wow.
There won't necessarily be museum hosts in there all the time, but it will be accessible. Yeah. And hopefully that will inspire people, and they'll learn a bit more about the club and its history, and hopefully chuck a donation in the pot. We don't charge for entrance, but you know, if people like it, and I really hope they do, because there's so much effort going into it. The response on the display, the new display cabinets, and the sponsorship was amazing. We sold out in 24 hours.
Because I was going to ask, John, that's one of the reasons I thought, get you on. We'll talk about the sponsorship of the cabinets, because I know they'd all been damaged. And you were offering this opportunity of 250 quid to sponsor a cabinet, which seems pretty good to me. And I thought, we'll get you on, see if we can, you know, see if our listener will put that in their pockets. But you've sold them.
We have, but you know what? We've on the bats for dinner. There's a special auction that night, and there's going to be three unique things that you won't, you would have difficulty finding. So one of them is the smaller honours board that came out of the original Plough Lane, and that was put up in 1977 after the election of the Football League. We have our last remaining turnstile from Plough Lane. That makes a great table in the garden or an ornament in your front room. You know, it will take four men and a Luton van to move it. But and the other thing we've got is a complete set of the programmes from that Batsford 3 years, including the away games at Burnley and Leeds. You know, so that they'll be signed off by the team, so that they'll be fairly unique as well. And there's a number of raffle options on the night, so you know, come along, have a dinner, learn something, and yeah, make sure you get some cash out before you come in. Yeah,
it's brilliant. I love the work of Wish, and it's some great people involved there, and obviously I've been involved in the past as well, so I know the management, I know how it all works, and it's fantastic, and this dinner's going to be amazing. And I know that there'll be other things popping up around the ground as well. And I have to say, earlier on this year, obviously, Niall and myself and our friend Tall Mark had the honour of donning the Wimbledon kit to represent Wish against the CCL team. Yeah. And I think that's still on YouTube as well. I tried to flip it, delete it. Because Matt, it was the most embarrassing thing.
No, Matt, I had Sonny in my pocket. he never got round me at all. It's one trick wonder. I had him in my pocket.
Yeah, that's
they,
right.
There were 10 lucky goals, whatever it was.
And that's actually going to be featured in the museum as well, as part of the Wish Story cabinet. So you guys will be you guys will be displayed in there.
I beg your pardon. What was that?
20 cabinets.
I don't think so.
Different periods.
I think he's got the video just playing on loop.
Right. I've got to talk to him. Dear just, YouTube.
So, just quickly, international weekend, the club's first proper international weekend. We have, at the moment, 12 different countries of fans coming from three different continents over that weekend. And our target is 25 countries and five continents.
That is amazing.
In the stadium at the same time. There's an open. It will start on Friday, the 14th of February. So there'll be new international displays. There'll be a tour guide to that on the Friday afternoon before the match on the Saturday. Big meet and greet with some legends in there and all our international supporters. So we're going to ask them to come in, come to the museum, come to the Phoenix. You know, we've got Hans Seegers flying in. We're trying to get Herman Eriksson over with the 10 Icelandic supporters that are coming in. So this to me is, you know,
wow.
I want to bring these people in. I want to make them feel part of the family. You know, that the Swedons, they come in for a game and they get 5 minutes and go away. You know, I want all of these people and all of these countries to be our global ambassadors and help us tell the story. So this, to me, is a kind of major, you know, launch pad for that, really. And it's up to the club to decide how they want to embrace that international audience and the benefits of it. But from us, we're going to build those bridges and build those foundations. It's not just open to international fans. The Friday thing, anybody wants to come along, come in and join with it. Meet the fans from Romania or Bulgaria or Iceland or, you know, Timbuktu probably as well.
I really hope there is someone from Timbuktu. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
But it's, I think it's fantastic, and this, you know, it's an idea that's been floated around before, this whole international ban, you know, international fan club, you know, like if people are paying, you know, whatever, 50 quid or something a year, and we find out what people could get for that. But, you know, that is a way of generating income, because I think there are other clubs that use that sort of model. And we're the only club like us with this amazing, unique story that we could, that we can sell internationally.
I think there are
so many other clubs, aren't there, that have got us, that look at us and kind of go, you know, this is the kind of club we want to be associated with. And when obviously we've got Boca and we've got St. Pauli, that are obvious connections, there will be other clubs around the world that would be like, you know, of course we're going to be connected with AFC Wimbledon, because that's so close to our story. I think there's one of the Fiorentina, like their club is another one that's been like had that fan ownership, fan control stuff. You know, there's lots of clubs. Oceana in Spain, you know, there are clubs like that that have got the right ethos that we could be closer to.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's interesting, you know, because that thing we had with Boca, we invited last year, which was kind of the first stab at the international market, really. I mean, that had incredible coverage off the back of that. And that really was the catalyst that's led to this year. But so Boca, as an example, they went from a standing start of nothing. Within 5 years, they had 320,000 worldwide members, and they net £1 million GBP out of that international membership. Now, I don't know what the club wants to do in regard of international thing, because they don't seem, you know, entirely clear about how they want to progress it. But, you know, we're telling the story, but we're also giving them an opportunity as a club to have a long, hard look at the international audience and what it can do for the club. It's not all about money. You know, sometimes it's about, you know, being those ambassadors in those countries and growing it and telling people. But you're right. I mean, we haven't, I don't think, you know, all of these things have grown organically. And the only reason they've grown is because of the story and because a few people picked up on it and told their friends. And then they've got these little groups all over the world.
Oh, that's brilliant. John, you do fantastic work. I love the work of Wish.
I totally agree with that. And I think it goes back to what I say. I mean, the club's commercial team had spent a long time selling that story nationally and internationally, and the uniqueness of it and that kind of beating the odds and all that stands for. That is like anybody who is a bit romantic, right, and thinks football can be a force for good, then we're the club to buy into. And that's what we should be. You know, we should be selling that everywhere. And it really frustrates me that we don't.
There's a great opportunity.
The work that John puts in, the work that John does is phenomenal. And what Wish do is phenomenal. I've like basically touched the sides of what Wish are doing a couple of times, and always impressed the amount of hard work that Wish put in. And, you know, for me, it was always about the history and traditions of the club that we wanted to preserve and protect and take through to AFC Wimbledon and like now take that further forward. So big up to you, John. And, you know, I really hope that a lot of people take that forward. And our one listener who listens to this podcast decides to volunteer for Wish.
John, it's fantastic work. And I mean, I think that in actual fact, the 14th of Feb could be a really good opportunity to do a wonderful little promo with the club, with these fans, getting them to say, you know, like up the dons in those various different languages, and start that campaign, and bring some more funds in, because that's that is an opportunity there that I think we shouldn't be missing. Anyhow, I'm sure that the James Woodruff and all of the other people associated with the DTB and the PLC are listening in, and we'll be taking this on. John, you'll be getting calls at the end of the week. Thank you all very, very much today for this. For being on the pod. Thank you to DTB nominee Adam Proctor, Monfrey and R. Cooper, and the MD of Wimbledon in Sport and History, John Lynch. My name's Matt Cooper. We're the same old Wombles. Goodbye.